Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hey, this is Kat, Communications Director of HRN, here with a preview of Episode 2 of Meat and 3. This week, we're talking pork. We'll learn the best way to make a BLT.
I don't think I've ever successfully made a BLT just because I eat the bacon before any other part.
How pitmasters and restaurateurs are helping put small-scale pig farmers back to work in Alabama.
It's all about money. That's the bottom line.
What pork has to do with economics?
Farmers could be particularly affected by China's threat to levy its own tariffs on pork and soybeans.
And with government.
Basically, all of politics is pork at this point.
So tune in on Friday afternoon for your weekly serving of Meat and Three. And make sure you subscribe to be the first to know when new episodes air.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host Akiko Katema, a food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Chuck Malone, who recently worked at a shochu distillery on a beautiful Japanese island called Amami for 3 months. Also, he's a professional jazz musician. And sake is becoming increasingly popular outside of Japan, but what we have not discovered enough is shochu, which is a traditional distilled alcohol beverage, and its popularity was revived in Japan about 15 years ago, mainly because of its health benefit. So if you go to Japan and visit bar or izakaya in Japan, you'd find the shochu as popular as sake, if not more. And Chuck discovered the charm of shochu while he was working at a Navy base in Japan, and his life changed ever since. So today we'll discuss Chuck's journey to discover Japanese shochu, the unique shochu he made during his internship called the Kokuto Shochu, and his host distillery that offered more than shochu products to the community, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats, and please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let me know. And you can email us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Now let's start a conversation with Chuck Malone. Hi, Chuck.
Hello.
Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hello.
So we have a lot of questions today.
I like that intro music.
Oh, okay.
That's great.
Yeah, that's original. Former engineers, Chuck's friends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
A nice groove to it.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. So first of all, let's talk about your unique background. So you grew up in near Chicago, and you became a jazz musician. So fill in the blank between that and that.
Sure, there's a big blank to fill up there. But I grew up in a city called Calumet City, Illinois, which is a south suburb of Chicago. And I got a job. I was playing piano. I'd been playing piano in church and everything growing up. And I went to school for a couple semesters here and there for piano. But I got a job with, I auditioned for a company called The Second City, which is a comedy club in Chicago. And they needed piano players for their touring companies. Mm. So there's 3 touring companies. And
that was a very famous club.
Yeah, it's still a very famous club. A lot of great comedians have come out of the clubs. Mm. And A lot of great musicians have come out of there too, as well, and like people I've idolized my whole life. Great, you know, great piano players. So I was fortunate and very lucky enough to go on tour with them for, and I did that for about 5 years, and it really kind of honed my skills a little bit as far as becoming a better piano player and improvising with people and everything. And so I did that, and I eventually got into about my mid-20s, and I was like, I was kind of done with that, and I was ready to figure out the next phase of my life at the time. And I was 26 or 27, and I was like, I don't have a job. I'm in Chicago right now. What is the next thing I'm going to do? So my brother-in-law told me, who is a Navy veteran, he said, Paul's name, he said, hey, did you know you can play piano for the military? And I was like, no, you can't.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know it either. And then he's also like, did you know that there's a Navy base just an hour north, or, you know, in right by Chicago, by Great America, Six Flags Great America? I'm like, I know there's a great amusement park there, but I didn't know there was a Navy base there. So I made a phone call, literally. It was just on a whim. It was like a Thursday. I had called them and said, hey, I just want to take an audition? And so by Saturday, I was out there taking an audition. And then within like 2 or 3 days, they were like, hey, we got a job for you. If you want to play piano for the military,
wow,
you can, you know, you'll have to sign a contract for 4 years. And at that point I didn't have a job. I wasn't, you know, I was like, this sounds amazing. This sounds incredible.
And it's amazing that the music is so relevant to the military too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So I played a lot of piano in the military, but also a lot of bass drum and cymbals the whole time, the John Philip Sousa and all that stuff. So, which I didn't know how to play those instruments at all before I joined. So it was a lot of practicing, a lot of, well, I won't say angry, but a lot of help along the way from drill sergeants along the way to get to the place where I could play it pretty properly. Yeah,
that's
pretty
fabulous.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then you spent 2 years in Yokosuka, a Navy base in Japan. So how did, it was like you were sent over to Yokosuka?
My first 2 years were in Rhode Island. So I was at the Newport Naval Station in Rhode Island for 2 years. And then it turned out I was single. So a lot of times they'll put the single musicians in the overseas bands. So they said, hey, we need a piano player in Japan. Are you interested in living in Japan for 2 years? And I'm like, yeah, of course I'm interested in moving to Japan.
Wow.
So within about 18 months of being in the military, I was living in Japan.
Wow. So how did you like the Japanese culture?
I love it. Oh my goodness. It was amazing. I was fortunate enough to have an apartment off base. So it was, you know, it was great to like immerse myself as much as I could in the area with the Japanese culture.
Right, free to discover the local area.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
Right. And then, so after being honorably discharged in 2015, you came to New York and started studying at New School. So did you major anything related to?
When I first left the military in 2015, I was like, the only thing I really have done my whole life is be a musician. So I'm like, well, I've never finished my degree. I want to go and think the New School is 100% covered by the GI Bill. And I wanted to move to New York. So, and it's got a great jazz school. So I put an audition in and I was like, I'm going to go there for the first, you know, I'll go there for a semester and see how I like it and everything.
Wow.
So I majored in jazz composition or jazz performance for one semester when I left the military.
Right.
But then I got obsessed with shochu.
Wow. But you graduated before you went to Japan?
I didn't graduate. I just recently graduated college. My ceremony was on Friday.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks. I call it 17 years of college success.
Well, it's better to take longer than quickly.
I should have took a long time.
Yeah, okay. And then eventually you get to, you know, what you wanted to do.
Yeah, the New School really opened up a lot of different doors for me that I did not see coming when I left the military. It really did.
Right. Okay, so let's get to shochu. So what specifically, I'm sure you tasted shochu when I was in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what specifically was attractive about shochu to you?
It was just so unique to me. it was just different than anything I had tasted. And really, I kind of went the Chuhai route to shochu.
Okay, so let's before I forget, so let's just talk briefly. What's shochu by definition? Quickly for listeners who are not familiar.
It's a single distilled spirit. You can use rice, and where I made it, we used rice, and we used kokuto, which is unrefined brown sugar. Mm. What's very popular is imo, a potato shochu, buckwheat, and barley shochu is very, but it's only distilled one time, and it's usually around 25% in
alcohol.
Japan. Yeah,
right. Yeah, yeah. You can use like carrots or chestnut or something, whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's a very traditional.
It's a very traditional Japanese drink. Right. It's 1600 years of history. And, yeah, it's just very delicious, and there's different ways of making it. I learned how to make a version of honkaku shochu, which is the parameter set up by the government that you have to you do it a specific way, and you can call it honkaku shochu.
Meaning, like, there are two layers and the higher layer. Higher quality one. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope that was a good enough definition.
Well, definition was perfect, but, you know, I mean, there are many other distilled alcohol and, of course, fermented alcohol. But this is distilled, but alcohol is not 40%, 35%.
It can be, but, you know, it's very popular to be lower alcohol. Right. Yeah. And the goal of shochu really is to you're not masking the ingredients you're using. You're highlighting the ingredients that are being used in it.
So pure flavor of ingredients.
Very pure flavor. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah, whenever I taste that, you know, you can tell it's made of potato or barley.
Exactly.
It's very obvious.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah. And that's what's beautiful about it. I love it. Yeah.
So, so you're going to get to your shochu that you made later. But so you had an internship at the shochu distillery in Amami Oshima, which is Kagoshima Prefecture in Kyushu, for nearly 3 months in 2017. So, but why you like shochu, but why did you decide to work, like, by hand?
Well, it's interesting because I saw a lot of similarities between shochu and, I don't know, being a musician. And it's kind of a stretch, but I did see it. It was I like the idea of creating something, of you know, bringing something new into the world, bringing a joy into something. You know what I mean? Just like you know, just being a part of something new and creative. And shochu has that, and it captures it. Like whether you're improvising over chords in a jazz song or a rock song or anything like that, but the fact that you can just improvise with ingredients and create this new amazing thing as well, there's a lot of similarities to it. Or even if you're improvising with actors, like what I did at the Second City, there's very a lot of parallels between that when you're making probably alcohol in general, but I really just see that when I with shochu.
Right. As well. Probably you don't know what the result is going to be, but you know you are heading towards something new. And
that's right. And you keep on doing it until you find something you really like.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that productive process that you loved, and you know, you could go to any distillery, but you chose Amami. So why is that?
I mean, it was, you know, I think things just really aligned. I don't know. I feel like it was almost meant to be because, I won this scholarship called the Gilman Scholarship from when I was a student at the New School. And they gave me a little bit of money to go study or take an internship in a foreign country. And I had already had it in my mind at that point. Is like, I want to learn more about how to make shochu. So I was reaching out trying to find companies that would take me on. And there was a couple barriers there because my Japanese skills they're not very good. I've been working on it. Been taking a couple of years, but I, you know, once you get on just, you know, production and assembly line, you don't want to get hurt or anything like that. So it was finding the right, you know, company that would help with that as well. And also, you know, it was hard to reach out to companies to, you know, by myself because I didn't have all the connections needed. But I had a good friend here in New York, Stephen Lyman, who you've had on the show.
He came here on episodes 23 and 109.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so yeah. He's really authority of shochu.
He really is. Actually, when we're thinking of the definition of shochu, I'm like, I hope I'm all right here, Stephen. I'm just kidding, buddy. I'm just kidding. But he is such a great guy and a really dear friend. And he, I reached out to him and... I really would like to go work at a shochu company, and he's done it many times before. And at that time, we knew each other, but weren't really like great friends yet. And so he was, kind of took a risk on me to say, hey, I think I know someone which you can, go work with. But I want to introduce you to my friend Tomoko. Mm-hmm. And Tomoko is a jazz singer. She's a great jazz singer. And she, Tomoko lives in Amami. And Tomoko and I talked on the phone for about an hour, just like getting to know each other and everything like that. And we became quick friends over the phone. Connected by music. So Steve was like, I know you love shochu. I also know you love, playing the piano. I have a friend who does pretty much the same thing in Amami. And he's like, I'm going to connect you two together. Mm. And so he did. And then things just kind of lined up. Tomoko was good friends with the Nishihira family. Mm. She's friends with Serena. And
so the Nishihara family is the Nishihara Shuzo distillery, your host family.
My host family, yes. Right.
But it's just, you got so lucky because Amami, I've never been there, but my dream place to visit because it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. So beautiful. I was blown away by it. It's a small little island that's surrounded by beautiful oceans and amazing mountains.
Mm. And they're like native animals that's only found on the island.
Habu, right? Isn't Habu like the snake?
I think couple other.
Yeah, there was a squirrel that I can't remember the exact name of it. But they're all very celebrated. That's what's really magical about it is it's... very specific things happen in Amami, and everyone kind of celebrates it. And Kokuto Shochu, it falls into that category.
Right. Mm. Okay. So, so what's the history of the Nishihara Shuzo? Because I heard it started the business in 1927.
It's been around for a long time. It actually came from Okinawa. They moved from Okinawa over to Amami. And Isao-san, who is Shacho, who's the head boss, he... who is Serena's father, and there's Kinuko-san, who is Serena's mother. Serena's the head toji.
Headmaster, the distiller.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, let's go ahead.
So they came over from, it was Isao-san's grandmother who had come over to Amami, and they actually made beer and shochu at first.
Interesting.
Yeah, and she was the first... Isao-san's grandmother was the first head toji in Amami.
Oh, did she do that? It was like a female toji.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow,
that's
interesting. Right.
And there's a great picture I should have brought in, but I'll send you. I have of the family in the, I think it's the 30s or so, she's right there.
Oh, wow. So I'll post it on the show page if you can see it to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow, that's very fascinating.
It is great, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then, it's the long history, and I heard it's very small. Like six employees?
Yeah, it's small. We have, there is Isao-san and Kinuko-san and Serena-san and Gupe, who is a bass player. I should just go through. Serena is also a great drummer as well. As a great teacher in Toji, she's a great drummer. And Gupe, or Yuya, is he's a great bass player.
Mm.
And he did a lot of production too as well. And there was Minoru-san, who he just had the biggest smile and laughed. And when any time we would play, he'd dance his heart out. And there was Satomi. And that was it. And Satomi worked in the office. And she had this beautiful beautiful kid that was running around the distillery all the time, too. It was just a small...
So probably because it's small, you were well taken care of in terms of, supplementing the language barriers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually, I would we got into a rhythm where for the first 2 or 3 hours I would come in the morning, and then in the afternoon with Kinuko-san and I would sit down and study Nihongo together.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. Yeah,
so even the free session of Japanese language classes.
It was 2 or 3 times. It would almost be every day for a little while. And I tell you, I started really, really picking it up a lot quicker. It's because, I mean, especially shochu, to talk, especially like, you know, temperature and all that stuff, right. Things that I needed to like understand what we were talking about. And,
right.
Yeah. Okay. It was great.
And then what kind of tasks were you in charge while you were working at the Nishihara Shuzo?
Well, they kind of started me off very, like, small. They at first it was, and it depended what was going on at the factory, at what, you know, stage we were in production at that time. So when I first got there, we just worked on labeling the bottles, and making sure that it's, you know, everything's labeled correctly, lined up perfectly, and looks great to be sent out.
Mm.
And then it went to washing the bottles, because they recycle the bottles, they'll come back to the factory, and they have this big washing machine pretty much for the bean. And then so I spent a day or two learning how to wash the bottles. And then as when the new fermentation, like the production cycle started, then it became like unloading the rice off and helping unload the rice off the truck, getting the kokuto, the fine brown sugar off the truck and everything. So a lot of it was that first, but then as the fermentation kind of moved on, it turned into eventually just Serena and I sitting at a desk and talking about, and really we communicated very well with each other. But there was also a lot of like Google Translates trying to figure what's going on. Yeah. And then, when we get to like there's a few like algebraic equations that we have to kind of go through. I found that to be kind of like, all right, we can go back to this and like we both understand this. And then if we were getting into like more complex stuff, it would take just a little bit longer to explain to get the language across. But I mean, she was always so very patient with making sure I understood everything that was going on.
Right. But again, you know, because it's a small place, she really needed someone to actually be a labor force.
Yeah. So I think I was helping out too. I liked it. Yeah.
Right. It was. And you mentioned kokuto shochu, which is unique to that. The Amami Islands, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you can tell us what kokuto shochu is exactly.
Oh, kokuto shochu is the most delicious shochu in the world.
Mm. Okay.
No.
All right, that's done.
That's it. So it is, once it's unrefined brown sugar, and it's rice, pretty much. And that's and water, of course, and komi koji, where you're taking rice and you're converting it into sugar, pretty much, that yeast can eat.
Right.
And then you're adding kokuto, and then we put it out at 25, 35, and 40% versions of it, I believe, in Amami, as far as Nishihira Shuzo. And the island had, if I recall correctly, they had 27 distilleries there that just made kokuto shochu, and they're the only ones in the whole on the planet that are making it there.
I think the Japanese government prohibits other places to make kokuto shochu.
I think so. Oh, you mean within the country?
Within the islands, yes. Amami Islands only.
That's right. Amami Islands only. That's it. Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to make kokuto shochu in Kyushu, it wouldn't be considered kokuto.
Right.
You couldn't call it kokuto. Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
And also,
which is awesome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like a champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
And I heard that it's it's similar to rum, flavor wise.
It's got a little similar. Properties to it, for sure.
People call it Japanese rums. And how do you describe the flavor?
The flavor? Well, you can really taste it. When I drink it, you can really, because I worked in the distillery for a while, I can really taste the sugar, the unrefined brown sugar. It's weird because when you're surrounded for it, constantly, it's like I can really get it out, and I love the taste of it. I just love the taste of that. But it's such a very smooth drink. Absolutely.
Because it's unrefined sugar. It has more robust flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And yeah, they actually make chuhais out of kokuto shochu in umami.
What's chuhai for listeners who
chuhais
don't know?
Chuhais are awesome too. Chuhai is like a seltzer water with like lemon flavoring or grapefruit flavoring, and you're adding shochu to that.
Mm.
But you're typically not adding honkaku shochu to it. You're adding shochu that's been distilled multiple times to give the more of a higher alcohol.
Okay.
And less flavor of the shochu.
Mm. So I think chuhai name came from highball, which is a tall glass mixed with a seltzer or something.
That's right.
It can be shochu, it can be whiskey.
It can be, right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a... So,
yeah, it's like shochu and highball. Shochu, chuhai.
Right.
Yeah.
So the benefit of that, one of the reasons shochu became popular is that highball is available anywhere in izakaya. Mm. And you can... change alcohol,
right?
And it's not as expensive because it's kind of diluted too.
Sure.
Yeah.
But chuhais you can buy in any 7-Eleven or Lawson's or convenience. In Japan, everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually had chuhai stands off the Navy base where I was, where all the sailors.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's where you'd get off of work and go to the chuhai stand. And
awesome.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, probably you didn't imagine that you'd make kokuto shochu that time.
Right? No, at that time I didn't know much about it because the shochu that's in a chuhai versus like honkaku kokuto shochu, they're just two different. They're two different things.
Okay,
for sure.
Yeah. So if you have kokuto shochu, the bottle of it, you could drink straight or chuhai style.
Yeah, you can because it's such a smooth. But it definitely does. You'll be able to taste the flavor of the kokuto shochu.
Which one do you like?
Which one do I like? As far as
the way to how to drink straight or?
Oh, I like it. I like it with a little bit of ice. I like a little bit of ice. Yeah, I like it neat too. I'm Mizuwari. I like it all. Yeah. As far as it's just so diverse.
Yeah, but I don't see that here in this country.
Mm.
Is your kokuto shochu available? Nishihara Shuzo is available in like places like New York?
No, there's only a few kokuto shochu available in New York. Like Lento. Mm. Lento's really, actually, that's an interesting thing. Lento does. There's Lento Jugo, and then there's a shochu called Amami that's kokuto that I've seen in the city here. But what Lento does when they, which is really cool, when they're fermenting their moromi, their mash, they line their tanks up with speakers around the moromi tank. So Lento, meaning the music phrase Lento.
Mm.
I should remember this correctly, which I believe means legato and smooth throughout.
Right.
It's been a while. But if they put the speakers around it, and so when you walk into the moromi, where the moromi is, or the distillery, the Lento distillery, and all you hear is like Beethoven's Ninth being played and Mozart going on, and you can stand in the middle of it, and there's Tchaikovsky's blaring while all this the shochu's fermenting, the mash is fermenting.
I've been to winery and an aging, the warehouse, they had that same system.
Yeah.
And they believe it ages wine well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
So it's the same idea,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the unique and fascinating Nishihara Shuzo family, Uhosechak, as an intern, more about the music side too. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies.
Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Chuck Malone, who recently worked as a shochu distillery on a beautiful Japanese island called Amami for 3 months. So, you had a very good relationship with your host family.
I did, yes, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, you know, the Toji Serena,
mm-hmm.
So it sounds like she's a very interesting person.
Mm.
So what's her background?
She went to school in Tokyo to play drums as a drummer.
Mm.
So she actually has a J-pop album out as well. So she's a very good musician, and she brings a lot of music back to Amami Island as well.
Mm. I actually found her wiki page as a musician. Sounds very established too.
Yeah, she really is. And I have her album here. I should give you a copy. I'll get you a copy. She's really a lot of fun. We actually played some of her tunes for a Christmas show at one point during the Christmas season. And,
wow.
So she's a very kind, sweet person who, you know, like I said, just made sure we could communicate well musically as well as, you know, our passion for making great shochu.
Mm. Does that reflect the way you have the same idea in the taste of shochu or the style of shochu?
I just think we kind of saw the world or see the world and we saw it in like kind of the same way what we were doing, creativity that we were making here.
Right. Yeah. So as a Toji, Serena kind of tried to be a little different, or did she invent something new every year?
Oh no, they use the same product. They make the same production every year. So I think they changed the sango one a few years back to make a little different flavor.
Right.
No, but they produce the same stuff.
Mm. But it's great. Somebody is so young, and then try to maintain, to preserve the tradition, and
yeah,
also.
Absolutely.
Was such a cool person, like a musician.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about the co-workers at the distillery, because it sounds like there are so many musicians.
Yeah, right? There were. Actually, the really a fun story is the first weekend I arrived in Amami, where, you know, I mean, that whole story is pretty fun because I got off a plane. I got off a plane on like a Wednesday or Thursday or so, and I couldn't figure out exactly where I was going because I had to get to the actual downtown area of it. But I had, you know, I'd been lost in Japan many times before, so I was like, this is going to be okay. I'll figure this out. It's actually one of my favorite things to do is just get lost in Japan and figure it out. It's fun. Because you never know who you're going to run into, right? You just don't know what kind of friends you're going to make.
Nobody's going to rob you, by the way.
No. My gosh, it's so safe and so amazing. It's fun. And you end up talking to people you wouldn't never talk to before. And trying foods and different things that you would have never... If I had planned it out, I don't think I would have had those experiences. So I that kind of mentality was left over in my mind when I was going back to Japan again. I'm like, I'll just get to Amami. I'm going to... I stayed 2 nights in Tokyo, saw my cousin Joe for a little while, and then it flew into Amami. And I figured out how to get on, you know, which bus to take and got into the city. And I was just so tired. I crashed the night. I guess, okay, let me finish telling this story. So I get into, eventually I'm introduced to the family and Tomoko finds me and everything. We meet up, she brings me to the distillery and we have this great conversation at the distillery when I meet everybody for the first time. And we talked for about an hour and we barely talked about shochu. We just talked about music and our families and like what was important to us and what are our life goals and what are our next music steps in our lives and everything like that. It was like shochu was almost an afterthought at that time. It's like, oh yeah, we're gonna have to start making shochu eventually, but that's a future thing. So we just had this great conversation where we drink, ocha and coffee for an hour or so. So they're like, okay, we're gonna have a welcoming party for you. So I go to this welcome on Saturday or so. They have a welcoming party and we drink lots of shochu and chuhai and all this stuff and have a great dinner And they're like, we know there's this place that has a band. Do you want to go jam for a little while? So like, yeah, let's go do it. So within the first week in there, the place when we got to the bar, it was empty. I guess it was more like, I think it was like a Thursday or Friday. It was just really slow. And they're like, okay, do you want to play some tunes? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So we run through like House of the Rising Sun and things. We were figuring out things in Georgia on my mind and everything like that. And Gupe's on the bass and Serena's playing drums and I'm on the kit. And Isawa-san turns out to have this amazing voice, this incredible voice. So he gets up there and he starts wailing on House of the Rising Sun and Georgia. And then earlier in the night, he had told me that he sang Just the Way You Are, Billy Joel's Just the Way You Are, to his wife Kanuko on their wedding day. And so by the end of the night, I played the intro riff to Just the Way You Are. Wow. And he jumped up on stage and Serena put a groove and Gupe played bass and he sang his heart out to Kanuko-san. It was just a beautiful moment.
Well, it sounds like music is more than language. It connects more strongly.
We really connected really well with it because we were still kind of, I was still struggling to communicate. I started communicating better after the 3 months I was there, but at that point it was kind of a struggle. But we really did talk musically. We talked very, very, very well to each other.
I'm jealous. I don't have that language. So yeah. So by the way, you have such a great family. It sounds like you made another family in Japan.
I did. Yeah, absolutely, right? Absolutely.
But then, how does your American family inspire you to keep chasing your dream?
They're great. They've always been inspirational to me for sure. It's always been go after it, Chuck. Just go do what you want. Whether if it was playing the piano with Second City or going on the Navy, or they're such always supportive, always there. Yeah, through my lower height times, they're always like, get out there and keep doing it, type of thing. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah, absolutely. And you told me about your brother at a young age.
I did. Yeah, he was my half brother. He's about a decade older than me, but I think that really kind of stuck with me a long time. That was kind of like, life's short and just gotta follow what you're in love with and just keep chasing it, type of thing. And I believe that, that kind of mentality has led me to a lot of great places and a lot of different things and great experiences.
What a gift from your lost brother, right?
Yeah,
that's great. So so what's your goals now? You know how to make shochu, and what's your plan?
Well, my plan, that's great. My biggest plan is to keep on learning how to make shochu, is to go back to Japan and keep studying to learn how to make shochu.
Right. That means that, we started to see sake brewery here in the States. That's about 15 something, but one in New York too.
Yeah, Brooklyn Crow, they're great. Right.
So,
they're a great product.
Are you planning to open the first shochu distillery in New York?
That's a dream. That's a dream. Absolutely.
Great.
That is absolutely a dream. I don't know what's that, or just a shochu product in New York. That's a dream. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any timeline?
What's that?
There's a timeline.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. That's it. There's no official timeline yet, but yeah, that's It's definitely a dream for sure to make that reality.
Yeah, so you're gonna learn more about the non-kokuto shochu, like general shochu.
Yeah, absolutely. There's I'd like to learn more about imo and a potato and barley and kome, rice, shochu. Like learn more about the production of those varieties of shochu for sure.
Are they very different?
I mean. It is different. Yeah. And the thing is, I can't really fully answer that question because I'm very specific in kokuto shochu on how
because
I make it.
I think, you know, other products are rice, barley, potato, there's starch.
That's so right, you gotta break the starch down.
You need to, convert that to sugar. But that's the shochu, kokuto shochu is a sugar, like wine, so it goes straight.
Right. Well, you still have to convert the rice, the komi koji.
But it must be very interesting.
Yeah, it's just like so much to learn, and it makes me very excited about that. Yeah.
Wow, that's inspiring.
No, I don't know about that.
So what do you think American people would accept, will learn more about shochu, and are they going to love it as much as sake?
Yeah. They should, because it's amazing. But, yeah, I think so. I really do think it's on the horizon. Like, it's coming. You know, it's one of the last, and I could be naive to other, I know I'm naive to other spirits that are popular in other countries that aren't popular here, but I do think that whole category of shochu is once the wall's kind of broken down and there's a good, you know, there's an introduction of it more into the States, I really believe it's going to become very popular.
I think it's interesting because I think Japan had a up and down popularity about shochu, right? Because one time it was popular, but then it had got old image. And then now, chuhai.
Yeah, chuhai. Right?
And they say it's a... And compared to beer or something, it's healthier because it's distilled, right? So why shochu is not popular yet in this country, you think?
I don't know. And actually, that was kind of when I first moved to New York and I saw, you know, I think one of the reasons Steve and I became such good friends because I found him because he's the god of shochu in New York. I don't know why, or what was your question? When is it going to be popular?
No, why? Because, you know, to me, it's healthy and, you know, it's not as strong as, like, typical whiskey level alcohol.
Right.
But people don't drink it.
Yeah.
And it's even food friendly, too.
Yeah. I do think it's gonna happen. And I don't know why it's taken so long to happen, but it is. It's coming. It's around the corner, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think also other thing is because alcohol is over 24 degrees and the tax gets much higher.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, then you need a different license to sell. So that's like technical things that could be preventing. But I like sake too, but shochu, I feel light and clean. And I think Steven told me once that he lost like, 20 pounds?
Yeah.
Drinking?
Shochu.
Yeah. Something like that.
So. I could see that.
Yeah.
But there is a movement happening. Mizu has a great shochu. They make that in the States right now, too.
Jesse,
yeah. They right. Taiko. They got a great shochu that they're putting out there, too.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite shochu.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So where can we find your update?
My update? Well, I'm on... Shochu, I'm at Shochu Jazzer.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the main ones. And then Facebook, Chuck Malone 7, but at Shochu Jazzer.
And also, I do still write
at
for
Shochu Jazz. I'm sorry.
Shochu Jazz. That's Facebook?
Yeah. No, that's Twitter.
Twitter. Okay. So.
That's right.
Shochu Jazz on Twitter. And you had a Kanpai.us column.
Yeah.
Right? So Kanpai.us is the Stephen Lyman's shochu.
That's right. Yeah.
Massive shochu knowledge website.
Yeah.
So you write?
I do, yeah. When I returned, Stephen had asked me to be a contributing writer to his website and just tell stories about my experience there. And so I've written three, and I'm working on the fourth one right now, and it's the fourth installment, and I still haven't gotten to mid-production of Shochu yet.
Okay.
So the fourth one, we'll be talking more about how my first day at the, or my how the, you know, the production of the Shochu getting started, and you know, learning that bean meant bottle. That was a big one for me.
Okay, so we'll be patient and keep reading.
Yeah, I'll
but
get
it's
it out there
pretty
soon.
Interesting, so no, I love
thanks.
You.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for reading it.
Yeah, and do you know anybody else who worked at Shochu Distillery other than you and Steven in Japan?
I don't. I think we're the only ones. I think we're the only ones as far as Americans who did it. Yeah, I think so. I don't know because I don't.
Right.
But I believe.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, you know, some like in this country, sake professionals worked in Japanese sake breweries. Mm-hmm. So I hope it's going to happen in Shochu distilleries too.
Oh, thank you.
Right. Yeah, okay, so so good luck.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me on this show. It's
yeah, well, hopefully you're going to come back after another internship.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to head back there at the end of this year, hopefully, for a little while.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. So definitely let me know.
Okay.
Yep. So thank you, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Yeah. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at JapanEats@HeritageRadioNetwork.org or at kikotema.com. And Japan Eats is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Engineer is David Tetsuro, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.